have a show today. Yeah, okay, Bob isn't here. All right, I'll get that out of the way early again. Disappoint you all. But we have Bob here in spirit. I'll say that much. I'm looking across at an empty seat. It's very sad. Ron used to sit there. I used to sit there. I used to sit in that seat with one John Seibel.
You dog, you.
Way back in 2010 when the show first opened. Do you know that on day... Guess, here's a trivia question for you. And maybe it's a story time with Grandpa Joe to lead off.
Oh, I have some hot cocoa already.
Pull up a chair, my little son. Pull up a chair for story time with Grandpa Joe. It was February 15th. Is that when this station started? I don't know.
Maybe it was right after the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah. Maybe it was February 15th. It was definitely 2010. And I was on the air with John Seibel. Very nervous in the back. And at about, I was doing the afternoon show, so it started at 2. About 1:15, I started having more blowouts than the 07 Patriots.
You were that concerned and worried.
Here's the trivia question. Who went to the, I think it was a Walgreens right around the corner and bought me Pepto-Bismol? Who did?
Jim Colony.
Good guess. Our current boss, Craig Riley.
That was my next guess.
And I still have the receipt. The receipt sat back in one of those desks for like 10 years and I discovered it. And now I have it as a memento.
Wow. How about that? You should get Craig to sign it for you.
I should actually get him to sign that. Be a wonderful piece of memorabilia. And then I sat in that chair with Josh Miller and Chris Muller. Then Ron sat in that chair with me. And now Bob sits in that chair, except he's not here today. But as I mentioned, he's here in spirit. And we're going to open up with a six-pack today. God bless me. Because there's a lot going on. A lot. You know, sometimes I worry about what we're going to talk about. Actually, that's a lie. I used to worry about what we would talk about on a given day, regardless of the show I was on. Like 4 hours every day. What if it's, you know, what if it's just a dead time? There's always something to talk about. Now, this is normally a very juicy time of year anyway, but storylines abound here. Baseball, football, hockey, and pomp. And that's where we begin, is the Ben Roethlisberger podcast called Footballin'. Joe Manganiello was on. Am I right about that, Horsefly?
Yeah, he was on. But Joe Manganiello and Ben.
Manganiello, not Manganiello. Manganiello. I'm sorry.
He even had to correct Ben. Ben mispronounced it.
Yeah, well, I feel better about that already. So Bob may not be here in spirit, but damn it, we're going to lead off with Bob today. These two, Manganiello and Big Ben. Pretty big celebrities in their own right, I would argue, right up there with Malzi. They were debating who's the biggest celebrity in Pittsburgh or Pittsburgh sports.
That they're debating the biggest celebrity they've had on the show, football.
On the show. Was Ron ever on the show?
I don't believe he was.
They've had Mike Tomlin on the show. They've had, I think, Jerome Bettis on the show.
They had James Harrison this year as well.
James Harrison has been on the show. I don't know if Cowher's been on the show. There's been some pretty big celebrities on that show, I might add. Where does Bob rank? Is he even in this discussion? Let's hear.
And this, I think, is going to be our first big-time celebrity, right? I mean, I can't. And if I'm forgetting somebody, I apologize.
No.
I mean, well, Bob Pompiani.
Oh, yeah.
Bob. The Pompin ain't easy.
Pompin ain't easy.
Actually, Bubbles. Is here. Should we introduce Bubbles first? Bubbles.
Yeah, man.
There you go.
Bubbles is here first. Bubbles, my friend Bubbles, and Bubbles' owner, Joe.
There you go.
Exactly. Thanks. All apologies to Bob Pompiani.
Well, that's all right.
We love you, Bob.
We do love Bob.
Can you believe that?
Joe Manganiello loves Bob, too.
I mean, wow, is all I have to say to that. Is Bob the biggest celebrity in Pittsburgh, period? Who's bigger?
No.
Give me a bigger one. Mike Tomlin?
Yeah.
I guess Sid, maybe. Is he the biggest non-athlete or coach celebrity in this town? Unquestionably, yes.
That currently lives in the town or is from the town?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about Michael Keaton or people
because that's
who
the first thing that came
here
to my mind, yeah.
And even Michael Keaton. Do kids of a certain age know Michael Keaton? No. Do they know Bob? Hell yes.
Yeah, Bob's got a very good case for that. Very good case.
That's how you get to have your name on the show, the Pomp and Joe show, without ever being there.
Mario probably as well would be number one.
I said no athlete or coach. No,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
I immediately think to athletes.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, Bob is up there.
What about in the state? I think he's top 10 in the state of Pennsylvania.
The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air still live in Philadelphia? I don't think so.
I think Bob is top 25 in the country and top 50 in the world. But there's no question, any discussion like that must include Bob. And we pay tribute to part-time Pomp here at the beginning of the show. Let's get to the other business at hand. I don't even know where to start. I've got a list of six-pack items, so we might have to turn this into an eight-pack, which was a great day in Buffalo a long time ago when Firebrewed Strohs came out not only with an eight-pack, but with a 15-pack. What an unbelievable bonus of three extra beers in that beautiful can. Do you remember those cans, Limits? Have you ever had a Strohs?
No.
Incredible. Part of the ritual was just looking at the can before he opened it. I mean, it was amazing.
You were admiring it like it was an Icy Light can with somebody's picture depicted on it?
When I learned that there was such a thing as a 15-pack, it was like Mardi Gras in Snyder, New York.
If it was Mardi Gras for you, what do you think it meant for Ron? Jubilee. Oh,
he told me they drank Strohs, and they even drank Jenny Cream over in Beaver County. Did you know that?
Ron probably drank everything imaginable that was possible to see and try out what he liked.
Still does. In fact, he's probably drinking it right now in Florida.
Do you think he listens to the show?
No.
Not at all?
No.
No
never,
curiosity?
Never, ever, ever. Even I've learned that he snuck back into town a couple times.
Yeah.
Went over to Domenico's. Free beer, free pasta.
I'd like to thank my friends at Domenico's for sponsoring this event.
He absolutely sneaks back into town, and I don't even think he listens to the show then.
Malzy does the best impersonation of
Mulsey's
Ron
very good at impersonations. Yes, he is. All right, back to the first item. Go. The Pirates make a trade. Them and the New York Mets both went out searching for offense over the past week. The Mets came up with Juan Soto. The Pirates came up with Spencer Horwitz. Raise your hand out there, although be careful while you're driving. If you knew who Spencer Horwitz was before last night, or if you knew who he was before I mentioned his name 10 seconds ago. Now, that doesn't mean he can't be good. He's a lightning in the bottle type guy. My question is, why is it always hoping, praying for lightning in a bottle? Why is it never we're going to trade for a good player still in his prime? Who's coming off a good year? They never seem to hit that trifecta. Good player. That's important because good is better than mediocre or bad. In his prime. That's important because generally pro athletes perform better in their primes. And number three, coming off a good season. That's important because it would indicate better than anything else that he's about to have another good season. Instead, they're always on the rowdy plan. Buy low and pray. And praying is not a plan, at least not when it comes to baseball, Limits. I don't know if this guy's going to be any good, Spencer Horwitz. He's older than Juan Soto, for God's sakes. He signed to the major league minimum for the next 2 years, which I'm sure the Pirates love. And he's got some potential. He's got some okay numbers. He's got some decent numbers in AAA. So what? All we ever hear about these days is how AAA, there's a wider gulf between AAA and the majors than there ever was. Andrew Lambeau has good numbers in AAA. Hank Davis hits like Hank Aaron in AAA. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Okay? So it's lightning in a bottle. The crazy thing about this one is it wasn't just a garage sale where you can get a good bargain. It wasn't just a flea market. You had to give something back to get this. It's like showing up at a flea market and seeing, like, you know, an old air conditioner that you want to refurbish. And you think you're going to get it for $10. And they say, no. This is a bartering situation. You have to give us something back. Not only did they do that, they gave up Luis Ortiz, who I think is a pretty good pitcher, a bona fide major league pitcher, and two left-handed prospects, one of whom, Michael Kennedy, is pretty highly regarded.
Yeah.
Like high ceiling, high risk type of guys. But why is this always the plan? Lightning in a bottle. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. Your thoughts?
I don't like it either. And I received a lot of texts from people yesterday reacting to the trade saying, oh, well, I like it. The Pirates got a real first baseman. They got an upgrade over last year. One, do we truly know that? And two,
Stop. They got an upgrade over last year is one of the arguments these people are using.
Yes.
I'm an upgrade over last year. I could go in and hit as many home runs as Rowdy Tellez did for the first 2 months. Anybody's an upgrade on what they had at that position. And you know what? Anybody would be an upgrade at third base, too. They had the worst hitting player in all of baseball, probably, in Key Brian Hayes. Please continue.
So what the thing I don't like the most about this trade is you give up your 15th prospect, your 17th prospect, and Luis Ortiz. I'm okay with giving up prospects. I'm fine with it. But I think what you need to do is get true value for it. Get somebody that's proven. And look, you're not going to get a star for those prospects. But Luis Ortiz proved in the second half that he is a viable number three or number four in a starting rotation.
Maybe.
So I felt like that he would be good enough in this trade in like a one for one. So I'm surprised that they had to give up more. Curious to see what Horwitz does. I mean, good OPS last year as a rookie, but this is not something that I wanted them to go get Christian Walker. Even Anthony Rizzo, I think, would have been better. So I'm a little underwhelmed.
Talk about lightning in a bottle. Here's Keith Law, who used to work for the Blue Jays front office on Spencer Horwitz and on this deal in general. And I used to have Keith on when I used to work at 1250 ESPN a million years ago. And he was great. This is what he said. And I quote, "This is certainly one of the strangest deals I can remember, as Spencer Horwitz is suddenly a hot commodity, which is unusual for a 27-year-old first baseman with middling power and fringy bat speed. Cleveland acquired Horwitz after lunch." They had just gotten him, right?
Yeah.
"Cleveland acquired Horwitz after lunch and flipped him to Pittsburgh for three pitchers before it even got to its fourth meal. Meanwhile, the Pirates needed a first baseman, and I think they still do." Talk about a rousing review.
Yeah, talk about answering all the questions. And I looked at his splits. He is a left-handed batter that, against lefties, does not hit the ball well. I think it was under 200.
I don't care about that. Does he hit righties?
He hits righties.
He does? For power? Because I looked at his overall numbers through his whole professional baseball career, and he's never hit for power.
He only hit 194 against lefties. He hit 285 with 12 home runs against righties in 93 games last year.
Good for him. So they still need a first baseman, I think. Now, maybe he does turn out. Maybe this is one of those lightning in a bottle situations. But again, why is that always the plan? Why can't you go out and somehow acquire a good player, still in his prime, coming off a good season? Why is that so hard to do? Law finishes with this: getting Ortiz, who isn't even eligible for arbitration for two more years, plus two high-risk, high-reward left-handed pitching prospects for Spencer Horwitz is just tremendous for Cleveland.
Oh, Cleveland incredibly won this trade.
Next. We'll come back to that and what else is going to happen at the winter meetings. And this brings up the argument we had the other day about baseball's allegedly broken economic system. And while I'll acknowledge the obvious here, it's unfair and it's imbalanced. You either find a way to deal with it or you don't. And isn't Cleveland a good example of that? They don't spend really a ton of money on players at all, although significantly more than the Pirates. They don't spend a ton, but they're one of those teams that really spits at the economic system and says, we're going to win anyway. In the last 9 years, the little old Cleveland Guardians have made six playoff appearances, have advanced to the AL Championship Series twice, and have gone to a World Series. I used to write and talk on 1250 ESPN a million years ago about, oh, the system's broken. It's so unfair. What are we ever going to do? We need a salary cap. We need a salary floor. It's just, I gave up on that, man. It's like pit football. A long time ago, I gave up on they're going to recapture the mid-70s. They're not. So what's the point in talking about it? Readjust your sights. The same with Major League Baseball's business model, its economic structure. I'll use the most hackneyed phrase of all time. It is what it is. It's as simple as that. There's no point in railing against it anymore. There's never going to be a salary cap. Do you know why? Because not enough owners want one. Do you know why? Because Major League Baseball is flourishing economically like never before. If this is a broken economic system, I'd hate to see a fixed one, because you have record-setting revenues soaring past $11 billion. You have teams spending more than ever on free agents, some of them anyway. You have the league rolling in billions of dollars from media rights deals that are coming up again for more billions. You have sponsorships that are soaring upwards of $2 billion in a record. You have good TV ratings for the World Series. Even attendance, little old attendance that doesn't really matter anymore, is up in back-to-back years for the first time in more than a decade. So if you're still crying and whining about baseball's economic system, leave. If you're one of the teams that either, or one of the owners that can't pay or won't pay, then what are you doing at the poker table? I see enough teams, including Cleveland, that spends very modestly on players and continues to compete for championships. Not just sneaking into wild cards. They've been in the AL Championship Series twice. They've been in the World Series fairly recently. Be smarter. Be better. Make real trades. Spend a little money on free agents. Market smaller than Pittsburgh is Milwaukee. They spent $215 million on Christian Yelich. So quit your belly aching and pony on up to the poker table and put some money down. Thoughts?
Good rant. I'm in staunch opposition. I want a salary cap. I want all that.
Me too.
I understand that it's very unlikely at this point to happen. So in the current economic system, I want to see them add like a considerable piece. And somebody else just came into the room and said, why didn't the Pirates just trade for Andre Jimenez, the second baseman that Cleveland traded away when they acquired Horowitz? So I don't know, man. The whole thing at this point just leaves me dumbfounded.
That is actually a great rant, too.
It does.
I think both our rants are reflective of a lot of mindsets around here. You know, for the parody pipe smokers, Major League Baseball, it needs to have the parody of the NFL. We don't have a chance. Wah, wah. Here are the facts. Since the year 2000, there have been 16 different World Series champions. That's more than in the salary cap leagues. 16 different World Series champs. NBA is at 11. The NHL and the NFL, where the same team wins and the same quarterback wins every year. Basically, in this entire millennium, it's been Brady or Mahomes. The NHL and NFL have had 13 apiece. So Major League Baseball has had a wider variety of champions than the salary cap sports. And you can stick this in your little parody pipe pomp wherever you are and smoke this too. Every Major League team has made at least one playoff appearance in the last 10 years. Every Major League team has made at least one playoff appearance in the last 10 years. Is that true in the NHL? No. Is it true in the NFL, where parity reigns? No. So again, pull out your little parity pipe and smoke it.
But that's not good enough. Going to the playoffs is not good enough when you might get in and not even have a shot. Like you're the, let's say getting in is the seventh
seed.
Like
the NFL,
in
where
the
fewer
NFL.
Teams
Congrats.
Get in and the same team and wins every year.
When I look at the World Series winners and I see LA Dodgers, Texas Rangers, Houston Astros, Atlanta Braves, LA Dodgers over the last 5 years, plus you can add in Washington, Boston, and Houston again.
How can you refute those numbers I just read? More teams make the playoffs and more teams win titles in Major League Baseball than the other three cap sports.
What I'm refuting is the teams that significantly win in baseball, there's a common theme and a common trend. I'm not comparing to other sports.
Okay.
I'm looking individually at baseball.
Yes.
When you look at that, the last quote-unquote small market team and the teams that get these draft picks, competitive balance round picks that we saw handed out this week, Kansas City is the only team in the last 10 years to be that in 2015. I mean, you've seen Tampa lose it. Arizona.
Tampa lost it because their manager didn't keep Blake Snell in a game when he was unhittable. But I get your point, and you're right about this. You do have to spend, by and large, to win in Major League Baseball, to win it all.
It's not good enough to just go to the playoffs. At least it shouldn't be.
To me, it would be good enough to go to a league championship series and then the World Series like Cleveland has done multiple times. Then you got to find a way to win. I'm not sure if you get to the World Series. As I said, you had Tampa against the Dodgers 4 years ago, five, whatever it was, and they didn't win because their idiot manager. But whatever. Okay, so you have to spend significantly to win a World Series. You know what the moral of that story is? Spend more. That's what it is. Or get out of the game. But nobody wants to get out of the game. Why?
Because they're making so much money.
Hand over fist. So next time there's a CBA that's up, markets like this, maybe the owner, people from that, from their ball clubs could step up and say this is wrong and I'm not signing off on this CBA. But I didn't hear that, did I? So why should I be mad if I were a Pirate fan if my own team isn't mad?
One of the gripes from what I hear from people in Cincinnati is that their owner doesn't care enough, as much as like a Steve Cohen does, or the Fenway Sports Group does, or the Dodgers ownership group does. Yeah. Now, they obviously have such great financial commitments that they can make, but I do wonder if an ownership group in Cincinnati or maybe Kansas City like it was 10 years ago, if they really invested as much as they could possibly compared to these higher market teams that have so much money, I wonder if things would be different.
I mean, Cincinnati spent $1 billion on players a couple of years ago. It didn't work. You know, I say quit whining and start winning. And maybe one step in that direction would be to make real trades for real players coming off good seasons in the primes of their careers. I'm just so far past the baseball's economic system. You know, go rail against the fact that the sky is blue. You going to change it? Next. Limits. Did you see the second episode of Hard Knocks?
I did.
And what did you think of the second episode of Hard Knocks?
It was very similar to what I thought of the first episode, that Mike Tomlin is clearly and very evidently the narrator of Hard Knocks. He is the guy that is telling the story of the entire show. And part of that is because the Steelers were featured again, the main game against Cleveland. And I just continue to be fascinated by Mike Tomlin and how he rallies his troops compared to Kevin Stefanski and Zach Taylor, who I don't know if they'd be able to sell me a used car. They seem very boring and uptight at times in their team meetings, and I don't get like very motivated by that at all. But when I listen to Tomlin, I want to run through a wall half the time. And that's not like Pittsburgh bias.
But how much of that are we going to get? He's very clearly the star of the show for all the reasons we delineated last week when I mentioned he's just a compelling character. He is. He could be eating Fritos, as he was last week. And you're compelled to watch and hear what he has to say. He's a compelling figure. The other guys, as you mentioned, come off like boring football coaches. He comes off like a television star. That's very different when you're looking at his recent coaching record, though. Like, it's time now to put together some big wins that match the compelling persona, if you know what I mean.
So there's two things that we know about Hard Knocks. The teams have final say on everything. And if they don't want something in, it's going to be left out. Two things that really resonated with me in the episode that I know the Steelers definitely probably wanted included was George Pickens talking to Mike Tomlin saying, I really want to play. I really wish I could be out there. And Mike Tomlin just basically saying, like, I know, we got to play it safe or whatever.
Yeah.
And the Ravens, despite being on a bye week, getting 1 minute of airtime, we had no knowledge at all what happened with Deontay Johnson. None at all.
No, this is, again, it's cool to watch, but I can get the same thing from inside the NFL. It's mic'd up. Guys are mic'd up. You get a little more access to team meetings and things like that, what the coaches are saying to the players. So it's cool and it's fun. It's entertaining, and it's very, very light. It's another episode of Soft Knocks, is what it is. They're not going in deep on any significant story. No tension whatsoever within the teams themselves. As you mentioned, you had Deontay Johnson refuse to go into a game. Do you think you might want to dive into that story a little bit in the off week? Maybe push a little bit, despite the teams having so much editorial control. At least I think they do. I don't know what percent it is. Is it 100? I mean, this is basically, it's been an infomercial for the league and the Steelers and everything else. And it's fun. It's good. It's entertaining. But it ain't Hard Knocks. It's not what it used to be. I mean, the George Pickens situation has to be raising tensions. You know, this was a huge story. We got nothing on it. Nothing at all. Deontay Johnson. I mean, what's happening in Cincinnati, too, behind the scenes? It's got to be unbelievable. Friction and tension when you're losing like that, and we get nothing.
Did you hear Joe Burrow's house got broken into on Monday night?
I did, yeah.
And he had a house sitter watching the house. He's like a famous social media celebrity watching the house.
Yeah, that was very odd.
Very interesting. Do you think we're going to get that on Hard Knocks?
I don't think we're going to get that on Hard Knocks. I think we'll get Joe Burrow and his Batmobile on Hard Knocks. Listen, it's fine. It's like when we sit down on Saturday nights at the Starkey household, my wife and I, we want to watch a movie. Do we want to watch, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off or a light comedy that has, you know, no deeper meaning, no nothing? Or do we want to, you know, settle in for something deeper, something intense, something dramatic? I guess it depends on your taste. And like most of us, I think, we have both. We can go for both. This is a light movie. It's a light comedy that you won't remember 10 minutes after it's done. That's what this is. And it's fine for what it is, but that's what it is. Coming up next, we continue our six-pack with booze raining down on the Penguins. And what did Sidney Crosby think of that? How about the Pirates' draft position next year? Are they top 10 again? And how about Ben on Mike Tomlin's position in the Coach of the Year race? We'll get to all of that next on Pomp and Joe. Off the Top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Got a ton happening today. Johnny Parrotto, the big boy, coming up. Card of the Week coming up. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. This Pirates thing is just incredible. How many years in a row are they going to? You'll know they've arrived when they don't have a top 10 pick anymore.